Hello and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And this week we are going to review a new film on Netflix called Point Blank. It stars Frank Grillo and Anthony Mackie, and I saw it 2 days ago, and that's about all I remember. But we'll get into it in a few minutes. I think there's one piece of news that we should at least touch on this week, though, which is the announcement that Warner Media, they've been like talking about, because everyone wants to have their own streaming service. Warner Media is no exception, but they didn't have a name for it. And so this week they announced they're going to call it HBO Max and that it's going to have Friends. Daryl, you wrote the article about it. What did you think of the news?
I don't know. Don't they have a bunch of streaming services already?
They do, but the whole thing is they were shutting all this stuff down. So like they shut down, like I forgot what their anime service was. They had Filmstruck, which they shut down. Right. I think there's a lot of rumors. No one's really sure if they're going to keep DC streaming, DC Universe.
Oh yeah,
going.
That'll probably be gone too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think so. The idea was basically AT&T bought Warner, you know, Time Warner, and was like, we're going to turn this into a Netflix. And this is why there's been, I think, a lot of conflict at HBO recently, because there was also this sense of, okay, you need to start cranking out a lot more content than you have been. And which is why the CEO of HBO, Richard Plepler? is leaving. And so the idea was, okay, HBO is going pretty well, but now we got to figure out what our like overall streaming strategy is. How do we compete with Disney, you know, whatever Disney is going to do, whatever all these other people are going to do. And the same way that NBC Universal is like, we got to do our own streaming app. And so there was supposed to be this one big app that would sort of replace everything. And it didn't have a name. And they're developing their own shows for it. They're doing like a Dune TV show that's going to be tied into the movie that comes out next year. They're doing an adaptation of Station 11, which is a really good science fiction novel. But I think they kind of couldn't figure out like what the identity of it was going to be. And so it sounds like they basically decided people know what HBO is. They like HBO. Let's just call this HBO and this will have HBO and then some other stuff too.
Max. It'll have Max too. Yeah.
Can we talk about the Max, the X and the Max and how stretched out it was?
Did you not like that?
No, it felt weird, right? Like it, I felt like it was supposed to be like an adult viewing version of HBO, which is already pretty much adult viewing. I just think the brand design is misleading. I don't think of, when I see that logo, I don't instantly think, oh, there's a place where I could stream Friends.
Right. It does seem, I mean, it reminds me of Cinemax.
Yeah, Cinemax.
Or whatever, like Skinemax, which is what the joke was, you went there for your softcore needs, I suppose. But it's
before the internet existed,
I suppose.
Right. I've been told. I've heard.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a weird branding choice. I get why they're doing it. I get why. I mean, I have to imagine that this is like the thing that this is the straw that broke the camel's back for Plepler. Like he was just sitting there being like, HBO, we make only good things and we make few of them. And then AT&T was like, no. You make everything
Welcome
we want
future.
You to make. And then also we call all of our shit together HBO Max. We're stealing your name and we're just pasting it over here. And then he was like, I'm done. I'm out. This is enough. But I don't know. What else were they going to call it? The Warner Media Max?
Where you watch Friends.
Yeah, that was the dumbest part. It drives me crazy. I can't deal anymore with like a shitty, like the two, there's two pieces of content. There's constantly a story about where The Office is and where Friends is. It's insane.
Why is it insane? I mean, what's insane is the fact that those shows are as popular as they are. But like, I mean, that's kind of like being like, I'm just so sick of like the demand on bottled water. Like
what? I am sick about that too.
I'm just saying, like, things that are the most popular thing ever, like businesses are going to capitalize on things that are so popular. Like, it's, do you know what I mean? I mean, I get that we need water to live and not friends to live. I just have to be really clear about that. I just like have a vision of my Twitter in a minute. So
there's literally Fast Company just did a story about Pottery Barn's friends collection, but I can't. It's a feedback loop, I think, is my main problem with it. Like, I get that it's popular, but it's now become more so, or like, you know, it's just growing and growing and growing because of kind of like our also interest in it, us being generally speaking
the
media
royal
like we're happy to pick up every single story about it, and I feel like that feeds it in a negative way, and then I feel like eventually, I think there's a future in which there all that
like
exists are those two pieces
up.
Of content.
I'm worried about it.
This went in a really different direction than I was expecting.
And maybe there's a Friends cinematic universe in the future and an Office cinematic universe, and those are the only two places that exist in the entertainment space. Like, there are spin-outs and sub stories, and I think that's where we're going. I think that the post Marvel, post Star Wars. That's where we end up. So you heard it here first.
Okay.
What I wonder is how many people are there for whom, in the case of The Office and NBC Universal or Friends and HBO Max, are there people who will say, okay, well, the fact that this service has Friends or The Office is going to be a deciding factor in whether or not I sign up.
Well, I hope not, because they can just go buy it. You can buy the whole thing one time, and then you have it, and you can watch whenever you want. And it's way cheaper than just subscribing to any of these things for any period of time. Right?
Yeah, so I own all of Friends. So I stopped. I actually care a lot about Friends. It's like a sentimental thing. I just feel like I watched it my whole life and grew up watching it. I watched it to fall asleep in high school. It's like my comfort food. And I own all of it, and I feel like it's better that way, because when you buy it, you get the extras, which some of the best jokes in Friends are things that have been cut and don't show in like the syndicated or the Netflix versions. So I'm all for buying it.
The old bloops? They got the bloops
in there?
Well,
the bloops are the best for sure. But then there's also just like good little one-liners and stuff that like were cut for time that I think are really funny. So you can buy it. But I don't think it should necessarily be like a deciding factor. But I also think that we're going to go through a phase where like we're also addicted and like horned up to watch TV. And as this whole thing,
thank you for that.
As this whole thing, like, you know, what is the word I'm looking for? Fragments, like fragments further. Uh-huh. Like,
oh, yeah,
there's
yeah,
going to
yeah,
be
totally.
A phase where we're on everything. And then that should like reconsolidate again at some point. But does that make sense? Am I even contributing?
I agree that I think that some of these services are just not going to survive because I think they have to, because of the amount of money that like a Warner or an NBC Universal is going to pour into it. Like, it needs to be, you know, really, I think, pretty popular to justify that investment. And I think, I don't know which ones, but some of them are going to fail, and then you're going to see that content coming back to Netflix, coming back to Hulu, and it's going to, I think there will be some consolidation again.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely going to flatten out and merge up and whatever. Like, yeah, because it can't survive otherwise, unless it just becomes, even if it just becomes TV again and people revert to kind of ad supported models or something, and there's some kind of seesaw that way. I don't think even that is sustainable with the number of them that are either announced or planned or whatever. I just got another pitch about Quibi. I still don't know how to say it. That one, and that one's coming, and you know, they're all over the place.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not super, I think it's going to be a few years where it's going to be, you know, kind of annoying, because like, everything that you, there'll be like one thing that you like on 10 different services.
Well, the one that is the best or the most representative of that to me right now is CBS All Access, because it has Star Trek Discovery and soon to have, what's the Picard project called? Does it have a name yet?
Yeah, it's called Picard. I'm not joking.
Right? Good. yeah, like that's it, right? Like there's absolutely nothing else on CBS
Twilight Zone.
On All Access. Oh, is that already out? I haven't even watched it.
Yeah, that's already out. I don't think it really made a big splash, but yeah, it is already out.
So it exists, but it's not, I don't know. At least for me, it's not an in-demand thing. And it sounds like for nobody, it's really an in-demand thing, right? But yeah, so like those, I think that is the good, like the good and the bad. That's the case where it's like, oh, this is what it'll all eventually look like, right? Like they'll have this one little gem and you're going to have to like, I don't know, have a rotating thing of email addresses and free signups to try to manage being able to watch just the selection of content you want to watch and then get out of there real quick or something.
Because I can imagine at some point, and this is what I did when CBS All Access had Star Trek Discovery, was that I signed up when Discovery was on, and then as soon as it was over, I unsubscribed. Or I think with season two, I was like planning to just basically sign up for like 1 month and just binge the whole thing and then unsubscribe. So I do think like the idea of like, I mean, I think most people won't care enough to do this, but I think that's people who are serious about like catching up on everything, it's going to be much less, oh, here are the services that I subscribe to. And it's going to be more, here are one or two that I subscribe to all the time. And then I have this like rotating, so these rotating slots where I'll subscribe to this when this is on, but then I'll unsubscribe, and I'll subscribe to Y when this is on.
Yeah.
And then I'll unsubscribe again.
Yeah. And I wonder though, if maybe they've built in that kind of expectation, like that lumpy model, like they think, oh yeah, maybe it'll go this way, but we've accounted for that in kind of our revenue projections. I don't know that they have. It seems like the early ones definitely don't, but HBO is a weird case because HBO has kind of the mixed model, right? Where they still have traditional premium cable packages and stuff like that to fall back on.
And in the past, HBO executives have said, you know, that they definitely assume that there are some people who are going to sign up when Game of Thrones starts and they're going to unsubscribe as soon as Game of Thrones ends.
Oh, right.
And, you know, that as long as, I guess the main thing for them is they have to have what's the next thing that will, and I guess they're probably hoping that it's going to be Westworld or maybe a variety of different things for different people that'll get people back in. So it's not just now that Game of Thrones is over, you're just screwed. But
yeah,
I think that some of the companies certainly have built this a degree of variability and churn into their models. But I think as a consumer, it's going to be kind of annoying.
Yeah, for sure. And then we'll get the aggregator services, and then the companies will just all acquire each other, and we'll be good.
That's right. But in the meantime, we can enjoy high-quality films on Netflix, like Point Blank.
Oh, yeah.
And and I mean, I've been sort of I don't actually think it's a terrible movie. Like, I had, like, reasonably okay time watching it. But in some ways, I had a similar reaction to it that I did to Triple Frontier, which we reviewed earlier this year, which is that there are like these, you know, relatively well-known, high-profile, talented stars. And then you're like, why are you in this movie? I don't understand really how this project came together.
Right. Yeah. I don't either. I mean, some of it, there's hints with the actors, at least it's like, okay, you were working with them on these other films, and then you just kind of pitched this while they were there, I guess. Although Frank Grillo, has he done Netflix stuff before? Was he like a bit player in The Punisher? I don't know. No.
No, he looks like somebody who should be in The Punisher, yes, but I don't believe he is.
No, I mean, like, yeah, his like biggest credit in my mind is like, oh, he's the good fighting guy in the elevator from Marvel movies, but also right. He played not Jigsaw, he played somebody, Like, he was the guy in the elevator who was like the turncoat Hydra. Spoilers for what, Captain America, something? The
first. Yeah, his character's name is Brock Rumlow. I guess in the comics, he's also called Crossbones.
Crossbones, yeah. And he's later, he actually plays Cross. Doesn't he play Crossbones in costume in one of the movies? I don't know.
In Civil War, yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah, so he has that going for him, but
and then he was in a couple of the Purge movies, and he was the best thing about those Purge sequels.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I'm more interested now. But Anthony Mackie was in the most recent season of Black Mirror, so I figured that's where they got him, because they were like, come in for this, mm-hmm. it's good, and stick around for this whole. We'll give you a whole movie because we just got it sitting here, and we gotta put people into it and shoot it.
I guess I wonder to what extent for them it's also like, well, I guess particularly in Frank Grillo's case, he's been in Marvel movies, but you know, his character, spoiler, is dead. Anthony Mackie, though, I mean, he's the new Captain America, so he's gonna be busy for a while, but I wonder if they're just trying to, you know, kind of thinking, well, I can't just do Marvel movies for the rest of my life, so I gotta find other stuff to do. So even if this isn't the most amazing script in the world, let's do it.
Well, yeah, maybe it was that way. Maybe they both, from their Marvel thing, teamed up and they were like, let's make a really
mediocre film,
pedestrian action movie.
So let's talk about the premise a little bit.
Okay.
Rewind.
Let's talk about the premise.
The premise. It's about it's about a bunch of things. It's about two brothers who are paid mercenaries, and then a nurse that they keep calling doctor, right? He's a nurse, right? Yeah. That eventually just becomes a doctor throughout the film. And there's a shootout early on, and one of the brother mercenaries gets hurt and is taken to a hospital where he abducts the pregnant wife of the nurse, and there are mobsters and there are corrupt police officers, and it's just like a 24-hour period, or maybe a little bit more than that, where they are all chasing each other through the city. Some good guys, some of the bad guys aren't as bad as you'd think. Some of the good guys are real bad. It's all so shocking. Some of the gangster drug dealers are actually like incredibly nuanced characters. Yeah, that's pretty much what's up.
Right.
I don't know if I'd say nuanced, but they have characteristics that you can expect. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your semantics, vocabulary, police.
Upheaval of expectations.
I just felt like the whole time the director was like, and the AV Club kind of reinforced this. I read AV Club's review. And they were just saying like, yeah, it felt like the director was like thumbing his nose at us. Like, oh, I'm going to trick you by making this just like one step away from the most obvious thing that it could be. And like, that just isn't enough to make it a good movie in any way. Particularly because even if it is just one step away, it's like, oh,
yeah,
I thought it might be the guy, but it's the girl. Okay. Got it. Like, it wasn't like, oh shit, it's her. Right. You know, like, it's just,
yeah,
that isn't how it works.
No, there was no, I would say there was like, it had, I guess, twists, but none of them had any stakes to them.
Right.
So there was no value in them. Right. It was like, oh, okay. That person's good. I thought they were bad. That person's bad.
I literally cared about none of the characters.
Like, what?
0% of them.
Yeah.
I will say that. So, that basically there's these two brothers, as you said, who are the criminals. And I actually found them somewhat interesting. Not enough to build an entire movie around, but I thought when they were like, they were definitely more interesting to me than the Anthony. Well, actually, that it's like, I feel like all the characters are kind of interesting in theory, but it just didn't do enough with them and didn't like develop them in any way, so that it never, like, I didn't think like it was just like a lot of different elements where I was like, I feel like I should be more invested in this. And I think the one exception was actually this character, Mateo, who is the, I think, younger brother and is the one who actually sort of puts a lot of the plot in motion, because he's the one who basically forces Anthony Mackie to break his brother out of the hospital. And he's this weird sort of like they don't, they're fairly upfront about the fact that he's kind of a terrible person and pulled, you know, Anthony Mackie and his wife into this horrible, you know, situation. But at the same time, he has this weird kind of innocence and this weird reliance on his brother and this kind of sweetness that he was actually, to me, the one interesting character.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good and had more layers than anybody else in the thing. I actually did a good job of provoking some kind of emotional response in me. You know, it's not extreme, but like, I was like, oh, that's he has a little bit of arc. He has a little bit of like development, and he has a little bit more substance and depth to kind of the past, I guess. So I would agree with that.
This is also a movie where anytime any character says, oh, I'm going to go over there, I'll be right back, you know that something horrible is going to happen. And they shoot it in like the most obvious way to like emphasize the fact that they're definitely not going to be right back. And then it just plays out in the most obvious way possible.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Don't let them leave if you want them to.
No.
No.
That's the lesson. I also want to like reiterate, I don't care about any of the characters. That's still true. But I do, like, I think the built-in empathy for a pregnant woman, I did care that she made it out and that her baby lived, but only for the sake of pregnant women should live. Like, yeah, exactly. Like,
I mean, that's pretty cheap, though.
Pregnant women should be safe.
Yeah.
And their babies should be born safely. Like, that. I just, like, that's just general. So, yeah, I just wanted to clarify. Yeah. I'm so paranoid about Twitter. I don't know why.
The good thing about a podcast is it takes a lot of dedication to get this far in and then get mad at us. But it could happen.
Yeah.
Could happen.
Oh, yeah.
I look forward to it. I would say that I was invested in that, in the Anthony Mackie's pregnant wife, whose name I can't remember and whose name is not in the Wikipedia entry for this movie. I wanted her to not die.
Her name is Karen.
Okay.
Wow.
Her real name is Tiona Paris. Girl. I don't know. Yeah, but the character's name.
And she's fine. I mean, the actress is fine. But
I just have like IMDb open. It's
not
impressive.
Like, normally we don't take that step. So good job. I'm just.
Yeah, well done. I think that because I'm used to the action movie where the wife gets killed. You know, I think the phrase that people use sometimes is like the wife gets fridged to like motivate the male character. And so I really wanted it not to be that story. And, I without getting into details, I think it's fair to say that's not exactly the narrative that they went down. So I appreciated that, but I didn't care about her as a character at all. I don't think they did anything. Like, I couldn't tell you anything about her except for the fact that she was pregnant and was kind of tough.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. They gave her a little bit of that. But overall, mostly just the pregnant person who is not a total victim, but who acts as that for most of the movie.
So I started out by saying that I still kind of enjoyed watching it. Like, I was entertained while it was going, even though it sort of immediately forgot it as soon as it ended. It sounded like you guys actively did not like watching it.
No. I mean, so like the benefits that it had were that it was short and that it was fast paced. So it's kind of like, it's hard to really get super bothered. At least for me, it's hard to get super bothered by it because it's over so quickly and because they move things along, right? Like, you know, no place in the movie do they like linger on a bunch of dialogue that you could do without or anything like that, right? Like, it's like, oh, here's a shooting part. Here's a little bit of a talking part. Now here's a fighting part, right? So, I don't think it had enough substance for me to be able to truly say I hated or despised it, frankly, which maybe is worse praise.
What about you, Jordan?
Yeah, I feel like it was one of those attempted like B B+, B level movies that actually didn't make it to B plus or B. You know, like it's like it wants to be so much for everybody that it's actually for nobody. You know, it's just like there's some little funny bits. There's some obviously like tons of action thriller stuff. There's like all of the tropes with corrupt cops. And, you know, there's the like kind of cliched plot line of like a really good guy is up against all odds and trying to save his family. So he goes and does bad things. Like, you know, it's just really super, super formulaic to the point where like it couldn't blind me to its formula. It didn't have any like veneer over that to make me be like, oh, that's okay. Like sometimes, you know, something's not great, but, and you know, it's following a formula, but it has enough of something to like push you over and be like, I'm fine with the fact that you're hitting me with a formula. And like, this just was not the case with that.
No. I definitely would have rather not have watched it. Like
me too. 100%.
If somebody came and was like, please, would you like your time back? Or would you like the memory or the experience of having watched this film? I would pick number one. Right?
Okay. Yeah. And I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
So even with that in mind, I do feel like there are a few things that are spoilers that I would like to talk about. So should we move into spoilers?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, spoilers for Point Blank. So if you don't want to have it ruined,
now that we've recommended,
stop listening now.
After that, you're really, really into it.
Mostly, I just want somebody to explain to me how there's this thumb drive with the name of every corrupt cop on it. And like, it seems so lazy and so confusing at the same time.
It's terrible OPSEC. They really did not think about that.
But where did it even come from? Who made this list?
Well, who is the guy? So who is the guy who died to get the list in the beginning? I don't even remember.
It was the DA, right?
So the DA had this list?
I think maybe Frank Grillo was going to give him the list.
He was going to give...
Stole the list from somebody and was going to give it to him.
Frank Grillo already had the list?
I think that's why he had it, is that he went in to give the list to the DA and the DA was dead. So he's like, well, I can't give it to you. You've been shot. And then he runs away.
Oh, wow. Okay. I really didn't get that part.
I'm not sure that's correct. And even if it's correct, it doesn't explain where Frank Grillo got the list.
No. No, especially not because he was, I think, as Jordan mentioned, like just a gun for hire.
The only reason I knew that is because I read the description, which calls them mercenaries. Or maybe that was in the AV Club review.
Right.
I think there's a little dialogue, but it's not really explained well at all.
No, it's not. And I know like the big twist is that Marcia Gay Harden is actually bad, right? Because she kills her partner and former lover, Boris MacGyver, the other guy, Masterson.
Yeah.
But she hired Frank Grillo too.
Did she?
Yes. Because she hired him and then they hired him to frame him for the death of the guy. That was how they were going to take care of the guy.
Okay.
So, wait a minute. But so if that's the case, why would they give him a real thumb drive at all?
Right. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Did they give him a real thumb drive? Did he just trick his buddy? Because then in the end, he uses it to like convince Big D.
Guys are thinking 20 times harder about this movie than anyone who made it. Like, just don't hurt yourselves.
Because he doesn't even use it.
The thumb drive is really stupid.
Yeah.
No, he does.
He uses a GoPro, which also gives rise to one of the stupidest lines in the whole movie. I don't have a cable for that one. And it's like, what are you doing? This movie made me the most mad is when it just, at first it seemed totally self-serious and then it started throwing jokes in it. I was like, are you a joke movie? Like a action buddy comedy movie or just a straight up action movie?
Yeah, the tone really changed. Like
yeah.
About halfway through the movie, like the two, Frank Grillo and the guy who was with him the whole movie, like, become like buddies.
Anthony Mackie.
Yeah. They become like buddies, and they're kind of joking and, like, you know, smiling at each other in the car. Like, let's just forget the fact that, like, your brother has my pregnant wife under hostage. Like, just completely change tones. And then Big D comes in and is like a total movie buff.
they move really quickly from, I'm forcing you to commit crimes against your job and workplace, like pretty serious ones, including electroshock a police officer or whatever, because I have your pregnant wife hostage, to we're in this together, we're buddies, without any real work to get us there. And we're like trading jokes, right? And then they, oh God, I mean, that part, all this stuff around the pregnant wife, I was like, no, don't do any of this. This is bad. Because then they also had another part towards the end of the thing where they just have the bad guy cop like beat on her. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? you're doing your jokes and your cool, like, oh, this is like Bad Boys or something type stuff. And then you're also like having someone just beat the shit out of a pregnant woman on screen, right? Like, what the fuck is this? Don't do this. Nobody wants to see this. And then they moved to, well, they had that, and they had Grillo like just smokes Marsha Gay Harden in the face like right after that too. And I was like, wow, this is a lot for.
Wait, he doesn't. Oh, you mean he hits her in the face?
Yeah, but I kind of liked that.
Okay.
Like, I didn't like the violence toward the pregnant woman. I just felt like that was either you have to be completely self-serious through the entire movie to do something like that, or you can't do that. But I liked that the bad guy was a girl and that he kicked her in the face like he would if it was a dude. She deserved it.
No, and I think that would be fine on its own. It's more that it was done like in sequence with this other stuff, and it was like,
yeah,
what are you doing here? What's this collection of rapid succession shots that you, what were you trying to convey here, right? Amid your jocular sort of light tone. So
I didn't like the shoot yourself line either. It's like,
yeah, oh, that too. Well, and they were playing with like a music montage, and like it was a kind of like a fun like end of the movie music montage. I forget what the track was. And then, like, I was like, is she going to fucking shoot herself? And then, like, at least she didn't do that, but she committed death by cop, which is, like, nearly as bad.
Yeah.
And you're like,
she committed death by cop by, like, pointing the gun at herself. So it was this thing where they shot her so that she wouldn't shoot
which
herself.
Which was so weird. Yeah, I wondered about it for, like, 5 whole minutes. No joke. I was like, is that what police do? Like, if you point a gun at yourself, they shoot you to, like, save you from the homicide? So confused by that, right? Like, that can't be in training.
No, it's not. I don't think that's standard practice. Everyone at once shoot all of their guns. And then while this is all going on too, Anthony Mackie is preposterously delivering his own baby in front of a bunch of other cops on like the grimy warehouse floor.
And the cops are like, we're gonna shoot you. And he's like, sorry cops, I've got to deliver this baby.
Yeah, like, I mean, what really probably would have happened was like they would have shot Anthony Mackie for being a black man, and then they would have not shot Marsha Gay Harden.
Yeah, 100%. Sadly.
Yeah, but like they do all that stuff, just absurd, and then they go like, and then Frank walks out and he like walks into the sunset. There's a funny joke about the GoPro cable. Like, what is this? What are you doing? Who made this movie?
Well, it was also really stupid because he was like, do you want, you know, so the GoPro joke is with right in the news van where he's trying to give the this guy the camera and say like, why don't you air the footage of Marsha Gay Harden murdering another cop? And he's like, don't worry about it. Just do it. Do you want an Emmy or not?
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, okay. Well, now that you've yelled at him, this is going to work. It's fine. It was just a lot. Nothing about that scene made any sense.
No.
And then it ends with the 1 year later segment, and you find out that they named their kid after Mateo.
Right. The guy who kidnapped the daughter. And like, yeah, he tried to help in the end. And pointed
the gun at the baby when it was inside, when she was pregnant.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was, of course. He did a lot for you. Really helped out. Yeah. He didn't even really attempt to save them in the end. Right. Like he just, like his death was, I think what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, oh, okay, this is somewhat touching. Cause he's like clearly a goofball. Who's just a mess, like a fuck up and whatever. But heart of gold, I don't know, who cares, redeems himself in some way, but like he doesn't really like save them. He just kind of, I don't know,
he does is oh, I'm gonna call my brother so I will consider letting you go,
yeah,
even though at this point there's no reason for me to keep you hostage,
yeah,
but I still need to call my brother. And then he gets shot.
Yeah. And then he gets shot, and then yeah, he gets shot in the leg, and then there's a point where she tries to save him. And then you're like, oh, okay, maybe now he'll save her. But he doesn't really. He just invites getting shot again in the face. So you're like, okay, I guess you're a hero? No, you're not. You're not a hero. And in no way do you deserve the baby naming, which they allude to earlier in another scene. Yeah. Right?
Wait, they named the baby after Mateo?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's named Maddie. God. And there's and it specifically, he says it in a text. Anthony Mackie says it in his text to Frank Grillo,
where his like his font is turned way up, like he's an 80-year-old man with terrible cataracts, because he's like, yeah. So they needed it for the shot, I guess. But then they have Grillo driving off in the sunset, and I still don't get this. Then there's a van after him, and I'm like, is the van bad, or did the van just happen to drive into the shot while you were filming this outro? Or was it like a cliffhanger? Like, don't, oh, he's at it again, this old mercenary. He'll be back in Point Blank 2.
Lost in New York.
The van guys are chasing him.
Yeah. Point Blanker. Well, because I assumed it was like a reference to the, you know, the last thing Marcia Gay Harden says to him is, you're always going to be looking over your shoulder.
Right.
And he says, yeah, but you won't be there.
Yeah. And
then he walks away, I guess. But I could imagine that they were so incompetent that they accidentally got another van in the shot. But I would think that they would still edit that van out. They would know not to include the van unless it was meant to be ominous in some way.
Yeah. 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 Maybe it's not like setting it up for a sequel. It's just like, and it was true. He was on the road,
looking over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Big D, because Jordan,
yeah,
sounded like
that was, yeah, one I didn't actually. I didn't mind it, I guess is the way to say it. Like, I minded the fact that we changed tone so quickly. But once I, you know, like just go ahead and like surrendered myself to the fact that we're like, oh, we're having fun now. I liked that Big D had gone to the lengths of like blowing up a cop car just so that he could film a movie. And yeah. I loved I just loved thinking about the fact that like, should he make this movie and release it, that like, it would be pretty easy to figure out that it's all real footage and that he was involved in all these crimes, but like, that wasn't really a focus of his. And I just thought all of that was really kind of funny.
Yeah. I don't think he has a great like release plan for this film, but it seemed like it brought him pleasure anyway.
I mean, that was what was nice about Big D, is I think he just did it for the sake of the art, which is
nice.
He wanted
to be a filmmaker. Like, that matters so much more to him clearly than any of his like other businesses, ongoing current businesses. And his team was committed to it too. Like, he was a leader, and that he really got them fired up about movies as well. So it was like a whole squad of filmmakers.
That was a pretty cool scene, I will say. Like, when they get out the car, and then the guy's like hanging out, like just with the foot on the gas, but able to escape, and they do the Molotov cocktail and lob it in there. That was a cool sequence.
I love that they
sequence.
Had to have someone else so lob a Molotov meta, in. Like,
right. Well, that guy had his hands full. He's not, he can't do it.
Like,
while he's on the car.
Know, it's like, if I came up with the plan, it would be that convoluted as well. There has to be other ways to do this, but okay.
That, It was good. That one was all right. There was some cheap stuff in there with like the initial reveal of him. I thought was kind of just stupid because they were like, "Oh, Big D, you think it's this big person? Nope, this little guy behind him." Great. But the movie thing was a little more genuine or interesting. Like the fact that he was a movie buff, which I think he establishes by, I forget what movie he, To Live and Die in LA is the one that he cites as like his proof. It's like, "Oh, we're going to watch this. You ever seen this?" And then they both look at each other like, "No, whatever." There's a couple things like that in there where you were like, "Oh, this could have been much more interesting." Like the reference to that Anthony Mackie makes to some kind of video game. I forget what it was. It was a video game reference I got, and Grillo like doesn't get it.
Was it Call of Duty?
No, it wasn't Call of Duty.
Action console game, right?
I thought it was like a good game. I don't remember. That's not my genre. But that was where it was like, "Oh, there's something here, right? They're not just cardboard people knocking out this like hackneyed action plot that you established." But there's so few and far between. I think those are the only two kind of examples of it in the whole movie, right?
Yeah, I didn't care about the video game thing, but I agree that the scenes with Big D, as much as like I thought he sort of was like a one joke character, but like the joke was reasonably good, and the scene where they set the car on fire is like the one part of the movie where I really felt like it came to life and was like staged in an interesting and exciting way, and I really felt like, "Oh, this could be a good movie," and then it kind of doesn't really go anywhere from there.
Yeah, there was another one where they tried that but failed, which was the car wash fight. I think they thought that was interesting.
Oh, and I forgot that.
I think that's where the tone shift happens for the first time, because you see like the old lady in the car in front of them at the car wash, and they're all fighting. And then there's like an old lady who doesn't notice they're fighting. And that was like, to my recollection, that was the first time that they were like, "Ha ha, ha ha."
Yeah, and weirdly, in that one, this also popped me right out of it, because the way that they shot it or edited it, it seemed to imply that they were listening to that music was playing real loud in the car wash, the background music for the scene, and then the lady could hear the music in her car muted because...
Yeah, it was weird. Like, what car wash plays music like?
No car wash plays music while the like inside the loud noisy car wash while the thing is
because that would be a waste of music.
Yes, and she would be listening to it in her car, but then it wouldn't be loud on the outside. It was like, okay, I get maybe you're saying like, "Oh, she's actually listening to this song," you know, fine, whatever. But it just was constructed in such a way that it was like, "No, wait, you've given me something to think about,"
instead
right?
Of whereas just watching like, these people beat each other up, like it should be simple.
Yeah, you just made this dumb instead of doing like, "Yeah, she's listening to this track, and then it's also the backing track for the action." It was like, "What is it? Or is there something else going on
with this car wash? I want to watch a movie about the businessman who started the car wash, and was like, we have a music plan."
Yeah, what can be different about our car wash? Well, let's play music inside the car wash.
Quietly into the radios of the car wash customers.
no, that's extra level.
Because I do feel like the idea of one person, you know, the one person who doesn't know there's a fight going on, just going on with their life while the fight goes on in the background is such a joke that has been done already. Yeah. And they just do it with no variation, no creativity, except again, and I had a similar confusion of like, wait, where's the music coming from? The way we're describing it is not good, and it doesn't matter. Like, who cares where the music comes from? But the way it's shot and edited actually makes it really confusing. And that is something I spent a few seconds thinking about for some reason.
That's the problem. Yeah. That it's shot and edited in a way that you give pause to think about it, which is like not right. Also, and then she like drops an F-bomb or something. They had a weird use of swearing in this one too, where they were just like, they just started the first one. I was like, "Oh, I guess this is a movie that has some swearing in it," which I was not like. The rest of the movie didn't seem like that, and then they just peppered it in these weird places, super unnecessary places. And it was just strange. Like, it was another one of those things where it's like, what type of movie do you want to be? You want a movie, be a movie where people are swearing? That's fine. Just make it seem natural as part of the world. Or you just don't. And then that's also fine. But they did this weird in-between thing where occasionally people would do it in a really jarring way that made you think about, like...
That's what I'm saying. It's, like, so much for everyone that it's for no one. Like... It just has no identity.
Yeah.
Well, because I mean, especially looking at the poster, the Netflix poster for the film, and there's this tagline, "A hell of a day, a hell of a pair," and it makes me think like they thought of this as sort of like the kind of mismatched, you know, not in this case cops, but sort of like that buddy cop genre of film, like 48 Hours or Lethal Weapon. And I mean, those are movies where there's comedy and there's like some pretty gnarly violence from what I can recall, like particularly in Lethal Weapon. But I guess there's some sort of skill that's required in terms of how you actually balance those tones and you go from like intense action scene to jokes.
Yeah.
And they just didn't have that skill. And I think there was also something about the situation itself was so that they started with is one that is both intense enough, scary enough, and also makes the one of the two people of the pair complicit enough that you can't ever fully relax because you're like, wait, his brother kidnapped his pregnant wife and like has been pointing guns at her and is like said yeah. He will kill her if you don't break this guy out of like the hospital. Like, it's really hard to be sympathetic or like think this is fun, like some sort of fun, you know, hijinks in some way.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like the Taken premise almost, right? It's like the stakes are like almost Taken stakes, and Liam Neeson does not fuck around. There's no joking. Liam Neeson goes there and just destroys everyone, right? Because it's like,
I've never seen Taken, and I probably never will, but I'll take your word.
Okay. Well, it is good.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll watch the first one at least, but yeah. None of the sequels. No sequels.
No, don't watch any of the sequels. But that's like the stakes level, and he doesn't. And this one, they kind of have like this. The situation is super dire, and then everyone's like, "All right, well, you know, what can you do? You gotta go along to get along." In this world, let's do some jokes. We're in this situation. Neither of us wants to be. Let's find common ground. And it's like, no, there's no common ground. This guy has your wife, pregnant wife, hostage. Like, what are you talking about?
And like that's what I'm saying. It like goes back and forth so much. Like then he hears her scream in the like warehouse, and he's like, oh, back to serious mode. That's my wife. I got to go run to her. And it's like, but you were just joking around in a car with this dude. Like, I just. Ugh. I hated it. I don't think you should watch it. That's enough. Yeah, I'm getting like...
Yeah, the more I talk about it, the more I hated it.
I also had a pizza delivered, so I'm smelling pizza while I'm getting angry talking about this. Like, really?
All right, we'll let you eat your pizza, because as you said, I think we've already put way more thought into it than whoever wrote this movie, who, incidentally, it's based on a French film, so I'm really curious about, like, what was it about the French film that made them say, you know what? This needs to be an American movie. Whatever it was, it clearly didn't get translated. But yeah, go eat your pizza.
It wasn't based on the French movie.
It was.
I thought it was like no relation to the French movie of the same name. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, if you go back to the credits, there's like that says based on a film directed by this person and written by these people.
I initially thought that it was... So this is the real reason I suggested it, because I thought it was... based on Point Break. I didn't in my
I thought it was Point Break too, and when I went to watch it, I searched for Point Break and didn't see anything new, and then I saw Point Blank and I said to Daryl, are you sure it's Point Break, because it looks like it may be Point Blank, and he said no, it's Point Break, and then a minute later he said actually it's Point Blank, and that all happened this morning.
Yeah.
Now you know why we watched it.
Original content.
Okay, well, with all of that out of the way, I will just very quickly remind our listeners that they can email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Let us know what you thought of Point Blank. If for some reason you do end up watching it, you can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. Jordan and Daryl, I will now leave you to eat your pizza.
Thank you. Bye, listeners.
Thanks. I wish I had pizza. Bye-bye.